We made this.
Every night, I dream the same dream. The nightmare begins. I did what I had to do to protect our world.
You cannot control everything, Strange. You opened the doorway between universes, and we don't know who or what will walk through it.
Wanda, what do you know about the multiverse?
Viz had his theories. He believed it was dangerous.
He was right.
I'm sorry, Stephen. Your desecration of reality will not go unpunished.
We should tell him the truth.
Things just got out of hand.
You break the rules.
Look out!
And become a hero. I do it. I become the enemy. Doesn't seem fair.
Fight!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Podcast 838, the podcast all about Marvel on the They Made This Podcast Network. My name is Kurt North, and joining me this week is Craig McKenzie. Craig, how are things?
Hello, things are good. I am a sentient ball of paint, but things could be worse.
If anyone doesn't realise by now, we are going to be talking about Doctor Strange 2. Nice to see Podcast 616, or the 616 Earth, kind of get a mention in this film, Craig. Yeah, it was nice.
Yeah.
I had a little chuckle to myself.
It's not the first time, though, because in Spider-Man Far From Home, Mysterio says, I'm from Earth, whatever it is, and your Earth is designated 616. So how does he know? He's faking it all. How did he know?
I have no idea. Lucky guesser, mate. Lucky guesser. You know, if it'd be even worse, it was 838. But yeah, we're on this podcast, basically, because Podcast 616 started with us.
It did.
All the way back in the days of WandaVision. So as co-hosts, we've joined back up and we're here to talk about Doctor Strange 2, The Multiverse of Madness, or WandaVision Season 2.
Well, kind of.
so we're here to talk about that, the Sam Raimi film, written, who was it written by? Is Michael Waldron, is that his name?
Yes, the writer on Loki.
Yes, that's right, yeah. So rather than like sort of beat around the bush, I mean, I've just literally come home, I've landed just home now from starting a film called Doctor Strange 2, The Multiverse of Madness, because I actually work in the cinema. So there was a good 120, 130 people in our screening today of a 260-seater cinema. So healthy viewing, and that's the second night, the first Friday, that it's been aired. So I watched it myself yesterday afternoon, and then I watched it last night to almost a full house in my local cinema, as opposed to the one where I work. So how have you got around seeing this film then, Craig? Have you seen it a couple of times?
Yes, I've seen it twice. It was only supposed to be once, but then I ended up getting invited to a fan screening, but I got in as press. That was nice. It was unexpected. It's really good to get advanced viewings of things outside of London. It's
right, yeah.
Good to be at pace with other places. It's a commonly it's a common criticism for anybody that does what I do outside of London. It's if you don't live in London, then you're screwed. Then you just have to wait till it comes out. Or if you're a Cineworld or Odeon Unlimited / Limitless member, sometimes you might get to see it a little bit early because they do unlimited screenings after it's screened and so on. Or if it's on delayed, it's, again, you're never getting to see it super early compared to, say, press. But no, it's really good. Keep doing this, guys. Keep doing fan screenings and early screening because so I can be ahead of the curve. So, yeah, I've seen it that once, and then I went to see it as I'd already booked it with a couple of friends on Thursday. So two viewings already, and okay. it's barely out.
Yeah. Well, strangely enough, talking about that, my history from 2006 into the job that I'm in now, which is still located in the actual complex. I'm actually kind of run the complex now, pretty much. But I grew up doing the projection work, you know, from 2006 onwards, and the digital film kind of thing comes in, and you know, obviously most cinema screens are digital now, 4K, 2K, wherever it may well be. And I was quite surprised that the key that allows you to play the film actually became available on Tuesday. So normally it's like a good maybe 24 hours before. So just give you enough time just to check it, to see if you've got any problems, or even the day of. Obviously my local cinema didn't do a midnight screening, and that seems to have gone a little bit by the wayside where I am.
It
seems to have
died a death, a little bit, which is good. I mean, I usually felt compelled to go to them if it was a big enough film.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's a day off work, or it's going out to work with no sleep. But, yeah, so I'm glad in a way that they've died off, although I think the last one I did would have been Endgame. There must have been something after that. But the last one I remember was Endgame, and the atmosphere was bouncing. Star Wars. Yeah, that was not a good midnight screening. Well, they got to see the whole trilogy at once, so it was really great to see, none of this fits together at all in quick succession. So that was, that's the way to experience it.
Yeah, so I just find it fascinating because it was a key to open. Basically, you get the film delivered to you via the internet or via hard drive, and then you have a key specific to your projector server. So you have to play it on that server. There's no other way of doing it, obviously, to protect privacy.
Picturing a Marvel Men in Black guy showing up with a suitcase with a hard drive in it. Opens, there's the dry ice. Once this has been viewed once, destroy it.
Exactly. So, yes, it was open for 2 or 3 days. And then, obviously, now from today, it's kind of open for like a week. And then it closes down and you negotiate your contract as you go along, kind of thing. So, but anyway, so yes, I was quite surprised that it was available on Tuesday. And unfortunately, I was off Wednesday, Thursday. So I didn't get a chance to like even get a sneak peek.
You can just sneak in on your off hours and watch it.
Yeah, I could have, but I'm not. In the price of fuel at the moment, I'm not driving on a 40 mile round trip just to see it. But, let's dive into the film then. So let's talk from the top. I mean, it has been a long time in the coming, this film. There has been a lot of things that has happened since. We've had a lot of the TV stuff. And as you say, WandaVision, for example, is obviously heavily linked with this episode, with this film. And you can tell it's heavily linked, and I'm sure we'll talk about that shortly. But what were your general first thoughts of the film?
I have to sit with it for longer before I shove it in the pantheon of MCU films, because it's difficult. I mean, I haven't even thought about where Shang-Chi and the others that were recent will fit in. It definitely won't be at the bottom for me. It's sort of middle up somewhere, I don't know. It's difficult to grade them against each other at this point because there's so many of them. But no, I did really enjoy it. And I do think that everybody will have had expectations of what this film was going to be, because there was rumours of cameos, there was rumours of this person appearing in it, rumours of it going to be about this, whatever. So I think everybody will go in expecting something, and nobody will get what they expect. I think it is very different to what the film suggests it will be. It was very different to what the title even suggests it will be, I think. So it's interesting in that respect. But I really enjoyed it, and I liked it. It was a relatively simple horror-driven chase for a lot of it. I'm not saying that the pacing is always great, but it is a good little chase movie with, you know, a really good antagonist, which we'll talk about, of course. But yeah, it's good. I gave it 4 stars when I reviewed it. So,
as I say, with my own biased nature on Elizabeth Olsen and the Scarlet Witch and Wanda and the like, but just taking that aside, I actually thought it was a really, really good movie. It's not often that I think I've got to go and see that immediately again. I think the when it comes to the pace, and it, I was thinking on my second watch about how different it is to the first film, and the first film's definitely more propulsive, but I think I kind of came up with the word on the way home before of it feels like a bit of a tame beast in that, as you say, it's kind of like it. Yes, it's slower. It doesn't have all of the intricacies of the stuff that I was expecting. Like you say, maybe some of the more out there abstractness. We get one sequence pretty much of like jumping through different universes at one point. But overall, I actually thought it was really good. I do like my dark natured films. I do like things that are psychologically get you and things like that. And this had a bit of everything, I think. And yeah, I mean, if I was to give out of five, I would say about the same, really. It's definitely something that, you know, it's not going to make my top echelons of Marvel films. It's definitely around the Guardians of the Galaxies and the Ragnaroks of this world. I definitely feel it's kind of like one of those kind of type of films. It feels like it's all its own kind of brand thing. So I don't know if you had that kind of thought as well, that it obviously has its own kind of stylistic approach, especially with Sam Raimi being in charge of the film.
Yeah, it's one of those films where you feel the stamp of the director. So Thor Ragnarok, you can tell it's, well, maybe you don't have a feel of Taika Waititi films because he's done a lot of smaller films before that, but you get the feel of there's something going on that is unusual in the context of Marvel films. James Gunn, same thing. Again, he doesn't have a signature style that's well known, but again, it's those films are different stylistically to everything else. And this film, yeah, definitely, if you know Sam Raimi's work, it's not entirely a Sam Raimi movie, and no one should ever expect it to be, because it is still a big franchise, big mega franchise movie, really. So the director is going to have to pull back a little bit because it still has to be part of the whole. But I would say it's 60-40 Sam Raimi, really. He got to put a lot of his little flourishes in that I thought was really good. It's, you know, a lot of little Evil Dead stuff, like the comedic edged spirits and stuff like that, all the stuff that he does so well. So yeah, it was great. And yeah, it's not as signature as, say, his Spider-Man movies, where he got to just do his own style completely, but certainly it stands out as being its own thing for me. At least enough. I don't think completely, but I don't think you would ever expect it to be completely someone else's, someone's style, really, in this type of franchise.
Yeah, I mean, just while we're talking about the stylistic approach of the film, I think that's probably a good start before we get into the nitty-gritty of the actual story. For me, I thought that there's elements where, when I was watching it on the first watch, was, and I know it's called the Multiverse of Madness, so I was expecting a lot of desperate things. I was expecting a few desperate things. But the moment when the rain started, well, the river started to come through the ceiling and the water slowed down, and you had that psychological aspect of, like, when's she going to appear and get the jump scare. At that point, I was going, there's a little bit too much stylistic approach that's just fractured. I think for me, that there was a little bit of that in my mind that was just kind of getting to the point of, oh, yeah, we've seen the wavy bit in the tea when they've drunken the tea. There's a few little moments that, like, sort of stand out that look great. But around that time, I was just starting to get a little bit tired of the different approaches. I don't know if you felt that at all, or was it more cohesive for you?
I was more into it when it was being different, actually, because that opening sequence, not quite opening sequence, but the opening sequence is running around in a CGI background that they're jumping off stuff. But the post-wedding, I guess, sequence where they're fighting the giant octopus thing in the city, that is very derivative of an MCU action sequence, even though Sam Raimi's doing it. It does have that comedic flourish at the end with the eye popping out and stuff, but it is your standard quote-unquote MCU sequence with they're equipping, they're chucking stuff, things are getting destroyed, etc. So that sequence was probably the least interesting for me, but whenever they were doing weird stuff, the mirrors and crawling through the mirrors and Wanda deteriorating as she was using her power and looking like a proper horror movie apparition chasing them and stuff like that, that was what I was super into. It was the more familiar stuff that I was less into.
Yeah, no, I don't think I wasn't having a go so much about the actual style, because it's very much me. I love that stuff. I mean, I will talk about the mirror university type stuff that was in there shortly, but I just felt that there was maybe just one too many. I like some of the stylistic approach that they're doing, and I think in their own individual things they were all great. I think when I got to like the soul stuff, I was a little bit okay, maybe. But it's a small criticism. It's not like, oh God, here we go, look at this. It just felt like, oh, he's another little tricky thing. Yeah, so that's just the way that I felt a little bit about it. But as I say, it was only minor things. It wasn't anything major at all. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, fair.
So
yeah.
Let's talk about a little bit of the actual story and where we were then. And the way it opens up in this kind of in-between world with a strange and this girl, and they're obviously heading towards what we will later learn is the Book of Fashanti. An interesting sequence, a very colourful, kaleidoscopic entrance. Do you think it worked as an entry point? And you know, and the idea that these creatures are out to get this girl. And one thing I particularly noted on just leaving it about 20 minutes ago was the kind of visualization image of Strange taking the power off America was kind of giving me memories of the whole Vision, Wanda and Thanos stuff as well. I thought there was a nice little bit of mirroring on that.
Yeah, I thought the opening sequence was okay. It was designed to give you a bit of a mystery as to, oh, what's going on? Who's she? Why is she being chased, etc.? Except if you have read anything about the film, you know, well, look, there's America Chavez and there's an alternate Doctor Strange. So sometimes knowing even a little bit about it can ruin something like that, because if you are just wondering, who the hell is she? What's going on here? Why is that big star portal open, etc.? I think it worked well enough. And the taking the power bit, the one thing I picked up on is the quote that Strange, or that version of Strange, says, where he says, in the grand calculus of the multiverse, your sacrifice means more than your life, which is exactly the same line that our Doctor Strange says to Peter Parker in No Way Home about sending all the villains back. So you don't know at the time, but it does set up that question that goes throughout the film about, is Doctor Strange a good person?
Yeah.
Or can he be a good person? Or are they all just arrogant and lacking in compassion and things? Or is our Strange any different? And that's a question he asks himself. It's a question everybody that he encounters asks him. So I thought it was a good callback, actually, to that, even though you didn't really know it was part of the theme at the time. I picked up on the line the first time, and then I guess subconsciously later on in the film, I was like, okay, that's what they're getting at. But then the second time I saw it, I was like, oh, okay, that's them setting that up. It's, you know, this Strange isn't all that good, but is ours.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that we entirely still know the answer to that question.
Okay, well, let's talk about that then in general with Doctor Strange, because that's his general story, isn't it? I think one of the early scenes where he's with Christine at the wedding. And there's a few moments where, you know, she mentions the knife, and that will come back later on. And and there's moments where, you know, he's kind of like sort of being asked if he's happy. And I know that will come back towards the back end of the episode. I mean, you know, it is a Doctor Strange movie. And I know I joked with WandaVision and, you know, being season two and stuff. And there is some truth in that. But what do you make to Doctor Strange in this and this kind of arc for him? Because, you know, I mentioned it to, we were talking about this with Robert Turnbull last week on the actual first film, and his worry was that we were going to get a Christine lovey-dovey kind of thing, especially with what happened in What If. What do you make to Strange's story in this film then as a whole?
I find it interesting in the presence of Christine. Something I found interesting as well, because as a character, I equate Christine to Jane Foster, Natalie Portman's character, as in she's here and she's been signed up to do this big thing. And they're both really good actors that have been massively underused. So in the first Doctor Strange film, Christine had some stuff to do, but she was just a kind of hanger on. She was in the background. You go back to your 2002 Spider-Man film, she's the love interest. She isn't a character, she's a character's girlfriend, or a character's ex-girlfriend in this case. So the fact that she was in it, I was thinking, okay, why is she here? And then she disappears for quite a lot of the film, then you get the alternate version of her, and then when the alternate version appears, I'm like, okay, that's why she's okay being here, I suppose. And she did the voice in What If as well. But the whole Doctor Strange side of it, the idea that Christine is the one that got away and is always the one that got away in every single universe. And some versions of him take it to the extreme. For example, we had the What If version that literally tore apart the universe trying to save her when she died. You have the other version that's in this film that's similar to that one, but different, as in he's the one that tries to do all his counterparts a favour by killing them so they don't have to put up with the heartache, which is a bit of an extreme conclusion, but you can sort of see how he got there. So the "are you happy" question is a really simple one. And he answers it with, yeah, I'm happy, I'm powerful, and I saved the universe and stuff, but that's not enough. That's not what he wants out of life. And he isn't able to admit that to himself until later on. He isn't even able to admit that to his own Christine. It has to be another one. So he doesn't really answer that question. He does answer the fact that he isn't happy, but what is he prepared to do about it? And I think there's more to come with him having to let go of his own arrogance a bit in order to let himself be loved, I suppose, because Christine says, you have to be the one holding the knife. You have to be the one who's in charge. This is a Doctor Strange movie. We're all in a Doctor Strange movie. And, you know, it's funny you talk about WandaVision season two. It's Wanda in a Doctor Strange movie, which means that she isn't prominent, whereas it could be Doctor Strange appearing in a Wanda movie. You could flip it and make her the emotional centre of it, I suppose. And she kind of is in this, but yeah, it was an interesting arc for him. I don't think that it completes completely, which is something that annoys me in general about the MCU, where you don't get the end of stuff.
Yeah, I felt the same. I thought it didn't really land. I enjoyed it, and I think there was definitely some moments to like about it. And obviously, you know, the stuff with Donna and, you know, in the lake when he's talking to that Strange towards the end of the film felt like a little bit too... little too late. I know we also got Nick in the wedding scene, which was a great moment. The first viewing I got of it, there was people howling with laughter when he said about his two cats.
Yeah.
And I was one of them. Second one, they didn't really land as much, which I always find interesting when you watch things, because the first time I watched it, it was kind of like I'd say maybe 30 or 40 of us mid afternoon on a Thursday afternoon, so it wasn't exactly, you know, rammed. Yet the second time it was an absolute rammed cinema, and that didn't really get a response.
It was all dog people in that screening, clearly.
Must have been.
But yeah, there's another question. What happens if you're blipped and your cats aren't? Who feeds them?
Yeah, so, and then obviously he does mention the brother afterwards, so it's cats first for Nick, not a thing. But yeah, so I found it interesting. I just didn't feel there was enough... like resonance on it to really make me feel that way. I know that the pining over Christine didn't quite hit.
I mean, they needed to do that weird pavement flashback scene to remind you that that was what he was hung up on. So, yeah, so it's a bit of an afterthought in a way, even though it's supposed to be sort of central. But if you've seen What If, you can sort of extrapolate his connection to Christine, even though that wasn't the same Strange. You can get that. She got to him more than he lets on. That's what you're supposed to take from it.
And that was something I was going to ask, actually, and it's probably a perfect time to ask about this, because there is, in this film, more than some that I've actually seen that I can remember, really. I mean, yes, you do have to know stuff. I felt like there were moments when, I mean, obviously the WandaVision thing is going to be in forefront in my mind, but like thinking back to like the What If and WandaVision, it seemed like there was a lot of more weight in that than and having to know what happened in Westville and you know, having not necessarily knowing about the Doctor Strange thing, but listening to what he was saying towards the end and just reflecting back on what happened in What If. They felt like there was more of that than in previous films. I might be kind of surmising and being biased there, but I don't know. Did you feel that at all?
I think that if you haven't seen WandaVision, you might struggle with Wanda's role in this film. It's almost unfortunate that it's the two of us doing this, because it'd be good to get a voice that hasn't seen WandaVision to say, I could follow this or I couldn't. I think the film gives you enough information, but it's high-level information. You don't get the texture of her emotional journey in that series. If you're only watching the films, and know for a fact that some people do, they don't watch the TV stuff. And there's someone on my other podcast that isn't part of this network that only watches the films. They're just not interested in getting invested in the TV shows. So I'll be interested to get his perspective on having seen this film but not WandaVision, because I feel like you might be a little bit lost, because the last time you saw her would have been Endgame, and she was standing by a lake talking about how Vision's dead. And then suddenly you're in this film. It's like, what's this to do with children? Where did this come from? Why is she after children? When did she have children? When did this happen? So it's very much, it's expecting you to know, have done your homework a bit before going in. And I always kind of reject that notion, but I reject that notion when it's read a comic or whatever, where it's live action visual stuff, I'm more forgiving. So from that perspective, I've seen everything, so I understand what's going on. So I don't really care about the fact that they don't tell you everything. But at the same time, those that don't. But then those that claim, those that will say, I can't follow this, I don't understand what Wanda's arc was, and still want this shared universe that's fully connected. It's like, well, you can't have that and then complain about that. So what do you want it to do? Do you want it to hold your hand and tell you exactly everything you need to know? A good 10 minutes of the film just giving you a WandaVision flashback? Or do you want to just get on with it and enjoy that connection? You can draw in this character for this character for that reason, and boom, away you go. That's what the beauty of a shared universe is. Comics, much smaller medium with a much smaller audience, but they don't hold your hand in these things. If they bring in if they bring in a character that's done something before to continue what they were doing but in a different light, that's it. You're expected to either just read the comic or just go with it. I can see both sides, but I'm on the side of I've seen everything, so I don't really care.
Yeah, I mean, I was fine, and I'm in a bit of a mix of I've seen some TV shows, I've seen some movies, and I haven't. So, like I said last week, I haven't seen Ant-Man. I still haven't seen Eternals, but I have seen Shang-Chi recently. I'm working my way through them slowly. I don't think I'll end up watching the rest of Falcon and the Winter Soldier. It just wasn't my bag, really. But, there's elements. I mean, one of the things, like the whole scene in the farmyard and the beautiful trees with Wanda and then it's a kind of like he actually says things like, you know, you magic to children. And she went, well, isn't that what making children is kind of aspect to it? Was it enough for somebody who hasn't seen it? And you quickly, it's very simple idea, I think, but I think you're, point to how did she get there is probably more pertinent than actually understanding the point. You know, the point is fairly obvious, isn't it? It's a mother who wants to get back to her children, but it's not her children. I found that intriguing in that way.
Well, there's a moment, specific moment that'll hit differently depending on what audience you come from. If you come from the audience that has seen WandaVision, then that her introduction is her dreaming about her kids and they're just having a mundane, she's baking or whatever, the chocolate in the bowl thing, and she tucks them into bed and stuff. And then she wakes up and she's alone. Like, as a WandaVision viewer, we're like, holy crap, that's brutal. She's still tortured by this. And if you haven't seen WandaVision, you're just like, what? What is this? I don't understand what the significance... I mean, obviously you understand. Yeah. She's dreaming about kids. I don't remember her having kids. And she seems upset. Okay, let's move on.
In regards to that moment, though, I mean, I know I'm jumping around the place a little bit, but because we'll talk about Wanda in a second before we head back into some of the narrative stuff. When she does come on screen, and it is the 838 version through the dream, you get the WandaVision music.
Yeah.
And we've been talking on Star Trek Picard recently about fanfare and how fanfare in that show was just used too many times, you know, to the point of like, oh, here we go again. For me on this one, I feel like a bit of a hypocrite because I absolutely love this one because it was like, obviously, being WandaVision, the music kicks in, but it has a double kind of standard in that fact that that type of music with the WandaVision theme tune was part of the Hex, and then we find out this is part of the Hex. So I thought that was really nice, nice little soundbite.
It's also different to what you were talking about because in Picard it is manipulative. It is meant to, we're in familiar territory. It's the fanfare. You know, we understand that. That's what it sounds like. But with this, that's her theme at the moment. That's the music you associate with her. So that makes sense. It's the same as if Superman flies on the scene in, well, anything outside of the Snyderverse, I guess. You hear the da-da-da-da-da. And it's like, yeah, there he is. He's coming. It's what you expect. Or the Bond theme or whatever. You know, there's a few bars of music that just associated with their entry. So I think they should do more of that in the MCU, is pin a motif to characters. They have done in some cases. Spider-Man, for example. Michael Giacchino came up with a signature Spider-Man theme for his Spider-Man, or the MCU Spider-Man, and a few others. Captain America, you always get the you know, we get the World War II-esque sounding adventuring music associated with him and with her in this film. I think the WandaVision theme there was fine because, yeah, it's Wanda's music. It's all good. Why doesn't she want Vision back, though? That's an interesting one.
Yeah, that did enter my mind at one point. I was like, hang on a second. You know, well, she's got... And I half expected White Vision at some point. I was like, maybe. But maybe that's a stretch too far for people who haven't...
I want to go to a universe where my kids are, but not my husband. All right.
They're mine. So what about Wanda then? Because as this is portrayed, we find out that the very thing at the very beginning of the episode is being controlled or sent via Wanda and her being the antagonist of the piece. So what did you actually make to the way this story developed, that Strange went to her and she was the very person that's actually after America?
I thought it was really great that they leaned into her as the villain. I was worried that they were going to bitch out on it at a point. I thought it was going to be, yeah, she'll chase them for a bit and she realised the error of her ways and then work with them to defeat the real threat. But no, she was the villain throughout. And the villain takedown, which we'll probably talk a bit more about later, but was probably one of the best MCU villain takedowns they've had, because it comes from a place of emotion. But yeah, leaning into her as a villain was really good. I do think her motivation is oversimplified. She's your stereotypical mad woman. And this isn't something that occurred to me the first time I watched it. It was something that more stuck out to me the second time I watched it, so it isn't in my review, because my review is a knee-jerk thing. But she's the stereotypical mad woman, and then Strange is your stereotypical level-headed man, which is a bit of a sexist approach, I think. And it's a bit iffy in that way. She's mad, she just wants her kids, she's a mad mother type, she's one of those, you know, that seems to be what they're getting at there. And then they call out the double standard in dialogue, but they don't really call it out properly. So that's what I was talking about earlier, is if you'd flip this, if this had been a Wanda film where Doctor Strange was her antagonist, you could have really gone into the emotional weight behind that, because we bring a lot with us as WandaVision viewers. We know what she went through. We know why she feels like that. Even Strange does. He says, you've experienced so much loss or whatever. He understands where she's coming from, but the film doesn't give you enough to let you understand where she's coming from. We bring it with us, which isn't necessarily a good thing. And it's a problem in that respect, that she's just nuts throughout because she's a mother. And it's probably a bit walking back her character a little bit. But she was really good in that villain role. I thought she was scary at points. There was callbacks to Age of Ultron, with her hexing the guy, with her whispering in his ear and stuff. Just her being a proper witch. I really like that stuff. And when she was chasing them, she was limping and chasing them. It was, oh my God, she's going to get them. I was actually sort of on the edge of my seat at points, because it's like, God, she is unstoppable. She's relentless.
Yeah, and then there's something I do want to talk about later on when in regards to that, and part of the takedown and what happens in the middle of the movie, which I think is pertinent to the way that Wanda actually is played. In regards to, like, so as you say, the kind of the mother thing, there's a lot of things happening online, Craig, that I'm on the edge of in regards to her being a mother, and she has actually been asked the question, and she doesn't know where that's come from, but yeah, it's certainly an interesting it's an interesting world when you go into the social medias and look at
stay away. That's what I do. That is the multiverse of madness, is Twitter. Just don't go near it.
But it is funny. It is funny to watch and from afar, and to see that, you know, a lot of people are calling mommy and things like that, which is a bit like, okay.
Oh dear.
But she has been made aware of it. There's an interview where she actually gets asked the question. She's aware of the fan base kind of doing that, and I've seen obviously some of the tweets. But
I did see someone's comment about how she takes down the whole Illuminati and gives Doctor Strange a run for his money when she's wearing mom jeans. As someone I don't even know what those are, but someone described it in that way. So
there is comments like that. They're even seeping through to you. So if they're seeping through to you, then, you know, it's obviously doing.
Someone showed me that. I've not been on Twitter to look at these things. But yeah, I would get if viewers are annoyed by her relatively shallow characterization in this film for that reason, because there's so much more to it. And the work that WandaVision does gives you a lot of grounding for what she does here, but I think they probably definitely could have done more. They could have made her a more nuanced villain in the context of this film, because it was the whole, okay, I want to go to this reality and live with my children. What about their mother, who looks exactly like you? Yeah, well, just kill her or whatever. I don't know. I haven't thought about it. And then it's the, why do you want to steal her power? It's like, well, what if they get sick? Then I can just go to other universities and find a cure. And I'm not following your logic here. I mean, I am following your logic. That makes a kind of sense, but you've just gone mad. Yeah, and unrealistically mad, I think. I understand why people would be annoyed about that. And me speaking as a white male, how annoyed can I be by it? I mean, I suppose I can be, but how deeply can I understand that? Because it is another representation issue, isn't it? It's another, well, look, Doctor Strange has to calm this mad woman down. And that's a reading of the film that's not a very flattering one, I think.
That's not the way I particularly read it. But it's interesting that you've, obviously, on second watch, it kind of came up to you. I didn't think about it that way. And it is interesting how different people are reading different things in different ways. I think it's difficult with this story in general because, as you say, because of the sheer weight, and we've talked about Wanda, you know, already probably twice as long as Doctor Strange, because there is sheer weight of, you know, historical stuff that we can talk about and go through, and there's like a lot of things that we'll be thinking in our brains right now about how it works and how it doesn't work. It works to the effect of, and we'll talk about the Illuminati later, but we'll talk about the Illuminati in crux of Wanda, in that the way that the Illuminati seem to have been built up here is just to show how powerful Wanda is, and you know how quickly she can like sort of sort something out, like pretty much with the click of her fingers, to coin a term, and then obviously then to give us the payoff at the end where, you know, what is going to defeat it? Potentially this MacGuffin of a book, or this red herring of a book that's the antithesis of the Darkhold. And then obviously that gets destroyed. And it's actually, you know, America that actually does something that's more nuanced and more like a reflection. And the totally reaching out here, but I think her being in the reflections in the Mirror Universe section actually kind of filter through to that, because it's like that is giving her the reflection. She was in those like sort of reflections earlier on, not quite knowing what to do with that. And then by the end of this film, we get to see her actually seeing the physical reflection through her children, or through her who were, you know, well, 838 children, which aren't hers. That, you know, you've got that kind of reflection, and that's what brings her down. And as you say, that the ending of that works really well. But the Illuminati element, without talking about the Illuminati themselves, felt to me like it was a case of, let's get some superheroes together who are really powerful and show how powerful the Scarlet Witch is. That's the way it felt to me, and it felt quite overt in that.
Kind of, although the choices aren't necessarily the top benchers in the top Trump's deck of the Marvel Universe. You have a Captain Marvel, fine, probably up there in terms of power level. Reed Richards, not that powerful. He can stretch. He's not that great. Captain Carter / Captain America, again, not a match for Wanda. We already knew that. We already knew that Wanda could kick his ass, or kick her ass in this case. And Xavier, he's formidable in the mind department, but he's just a guy in a wheelchair. Black Bolt, well, I've seen the Inhumans TV show, unfortunately. I've seen all of it. I've sat through the whole thing. And yeah, he is one of the more powerful ones as well. But I don't think it was a great show force against her as such. I think the fact that she was up against Doctor Strange, that was powerful enough. In fact, him and Mordo and Wong, probably more powerful than any of those.
Do you think with the Illuminati then, with that kind of feeling, it was more a case of, and I did think this at one point, that it was their kind of privilege that they thought that they should be the powerful ones, the overseeing eye kind of thing, more than that, than actually believed that that was their kind of thing to do.
Yeah, the implication's sort of there that they're in charge, but who gives them the right to be in charge, so to speak. But they don't do enough with that. They don't do anything with that. I know from the comics the Illuminati are not a good idea because they just aren't. They're just billionaires or influential people that just do horrible things or make horrible decisions and couch it in the whole, someone has to make the tough calls. Like, yeah, do you? But in this film, all they do is they just explain stuff to Strange until Wanda kills them. That's their only purpose. They stand around. And I think the fact that people might be surprised by the cameos is what they're expecting to carry it. But what they're sitting there saying is nothing. It's like, well, this world thing that you or your counterpart as a hero, he wasn't. He went a bit nuts and we had to kill him. And that was it. You know, that's all you get from that, which is disappointing, really, because I was really hoping for something different. You get a brief fight with all of them. And that's some of the more visceral stuff in the film, actually. Seeing Black Bolt's skull get caved in was a bit of a shock. And then Xavier's neck gets snapped. I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah. Let's stick with Wanda before we go into some of the actual, cameos. So moving on to like sort of, you know, the fact that we've got the Wong and Wanda stuff where they obviously go to the to that mountainside, and she realizes it's her throne as such, and then the America stuff where she actually gets brought down at the end of the film because she realizes about the mother. It plays it quite well in the film itself, doesn't it? With when she first goes over using the technique of dreamwalking, where she actually goes into Wanda for the first time from the other universe, and they play that really well. There's like scenes where she was looking down, then she looks up, and there's a reflection of the Scarlet Witch in the mirror. Then, as she's walking away and she's being taken over, she hears the kids and her reaction there. There's even a moment where she actually looks directly at the camera, and it's like sort of stares beyond that camera in some ways. So they've really landed on that kind of like moment of the ice cream song, for example. And then by the end of the film, the reflection stuff of like, you know, they're absolutely petrified of this witch, and that's what brings Wanda down. So what did you make to those elements scattered throughout this film?
That was good. So her getting to see her kids in the flesh, confirming that they're real in a way, which makes you wonder how she conjured them up in the first place, obviously through magic, but she was tapping into the multiverse, I guess, to bring them into being, I suppose, in her universe. And they don't explain who the father is in the 838 universe either, or in any of the other universes. So they keep that vague, I guess deliberately, but I don't know. And yeah, as you say, she gets that moment where she sees, yeah, this is the life that I could have, and it's pretty great, but I'm just going to leave and murder everybody because I need to make this permanent. And then at the end, when she sees that not her kids, these kids that look like her kids and are, in theory, everything she wants, are terrified of her, and she's confronted by herself, that forces her to see the error of her ways. This, how can I deprive these children of their mother? Because that's essentially the reverse of what happened to me. I was a mother deprived of their children, her children. And she realizes that, and then she ultimately decides, no, the Darkhold's too tempting. I'll do this again if I don't destroy it. She destroys it and tears down the temple and crushes herself, which is almost exactly the same, at least in a high level, ending that Doc Ock gets in Spider-Man 2, where he wakes up to what he's been up to and decides, I'm going to put a stop to this myself, and drowns his machine and drowns with it. That's a lot like what happens here, which is interesting because it's a Sam Raimi film. And it's essentially the same, at least from a narrative standpoint, the villain realizing the error of their ways and then making the sacrifice as only they can. I don't understand why she has to tear down the temple with herself in it. I don't think she does have to do that, but sure. Okay, yeah, she can't go on living like this, I guess. I doubt that she's dead, though. I doubt that that'll be the end of her. But for the purposes of this, she can't live without her children, and then she can't live with the person she's become trying to get them back. So, yeah, it makes sense.
I was thinking about whether or not she would come back, or whether or not a variation of her would come back, because it's one of those things like, is this story done? Have we done enough with Wanda in the universe of, like, because she's always treaded this line. I mean, I'm not, a fan of the comics or, well, I don't read comics. I'm not saying I'm not a fan of the comics. If I read them, I probably would quite enjoy them. I've only ever read the Walking Dead comics. But there's this walk in the line of, like, sort of where she like, sort of falters and, you know, right through from Age of Ultron, right through the entire story arc. And this is kind of her, realization she's gone too far, and she's you know, she needs to pull back from that dark side kind of thing. I'm not sure there's much more that you could do with her. I wouldn't, as much as I'd absolutely adore WandaVision and seeing, you know, her like sort of running around in a 1950s outfit and smiling away and talking about Sokovia and stuff like that in all that aspect, and, you know, going on the date and stuff like that and having the meal with the boss and things. I'm not quite sure what else you could really do with her. And so I mean, she's such a great actress. I mean, she's done an amazing job in this film as well. I'm just not quite sure what else there would be for her to do.
Well, there's plenty of Scarlet Witch content in the comics they could pull from. They could develop her in some ways. They could have her survive and want to go on a bit of a redemptive arc where she's just helping people, trying to help people in whatever way she can, that she could do that. There's obviously the infamous No More Mutants thing, which I don't think they can necessarily do, because WandaVision is a riff on House of M, where she conjures up a reality where she's on top and has her children and has her family and whatever. That's a little bit like House of M, not completely, but House of M is a huge event, so I would really hate to see that sort of butchered in a single film or whatever. But so there's that, and currently there is no mutants, so she can't really say no more mutants. Get rid of something that we don't have yet. But that's one famous thing that she does. A lot of what she does in the comics is pretty destructive, actually. So I don't know. I would quite like to see a bit of a redemptive thing. She kills a lot of people in this film, a lot of people. So yeah. I don't know. I don't know what you could do with her next, but I do think there's more to do with her. I think there's always more to do with these characters because they keep enduring and keep doing it. You could bring in the 838 version to do stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what they do with it. I mean, one final moment, I think, or one final thing that I think we'll move on from Wanda, as much as I hate to do that, I could talk about
it. I don't want to hear about your multiverse dreams.
they'll stay in my multiverse.
It's horrifying that those exist.
Just for those people listening, I have been an absolute nightmare on the Discord, because every single picture that's been popping up on Glamour magazine and all kinds has been entered into Discord, and I think I'm not wanted anymore.
Elizabeth Olsen is aware.
Elizabeth Olsen is aware. She's now got a restraining order in several continents. So, I was thinking about the kind of some of the Sam Raimi stuff that Elizabeth Olsen has to do, like, as you say, the illusion that it was going to be maybe a zombie Wanda appears at one point, and then she's got that limp that she's walking with, and it is just 838 Wanda, which I thought was a nice little touch, especially given the strange that we see, the zombie strange that we see later on in the film. The kind of Terminator-esque kind of, like, as you say, chase scenes that we've got, and some of the shock horror stuff and the battle scenes were kind of quite visceral, as you say, some like, you know, What Mouth, for example, with Bolt. So I think some of the action pieces, I mean, she held herself really well in those. There was a little bit of an element of, you know, when we're seeing the wider shots, it was like, yeah, that's computer generated. There was a little bit of that for me on certain points.
Yeah, you're always going to get that, though. I'm not that bothered by that. And, this little things like, that was her being reasonable, quite like that touch. That was her holding back, and look how much she destroyed just when she was holding back. But now she's not being reasonable. That's why she didn't dreamwalk in the first place, I guess, because she was going to ask nicely, first of all.
Yeah, I thought that was good. And I'd say that the bit where she does do the Age of Ultron thing with the run, I thought that was really good. And as I say, the stuff in the mirror stuff where she's actually coming through the reflection where she's all like sort of folded over herself and kind of like sort of moving around and stuff like that. So it was all really effective stuff. And as you say, like the kind of that sort of horror-esque stuff, it's not something that I really see as horror, because horror is not something that really affects me. When I see something, I'm like, oh, that looks really nice. You know what I mean? I don't think of it as like, oh, look at that. You know what I mean? So it's
probably scare the crap out of 12-year-olds, all right? The intended audience as such.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, potentially. Maybe I just grew up too much watching Big Trouble in Little China. I love the reflection stuff, as I say, with the reflections later on. I thought that was a really nice touch that, and also grounded it in some weird way that, you know, the horror was coming through, like things like a pond, like a glass, like a such and such, and adding to that multiverse stuff. So I thought that was really effective with the way that they did that with Wanda, and as I say, when it got to that middle section after the Illuminati, changed again. It was more like you say, that chase scene of like, no matter how fast you run, she's going to be able to catch up with you.
It's the slasher villain thing. Doesn't matter how far away you get, you turn around and they're very close to you, just walking slowly. There was even that, the walking slowly bit where America was stuck in the cell. Christine was trying to get her out, where she couldn't open her own cell for some reason. And Wanda was just casually walking towards them. She wasn't in any hurry.
Yeah. Okay, so while we're in that cell then, so let's talk about the Illuminati and the characters that were being in. So John Krasinski, first up, what did he make to the reveal on that?
I found it distracting because we've all seen this. And WandaVision was supposed to be where he turned up, according to some people. Remember when it was Monica saying, I have a friend who's a physicist or something like that. They'll build us a thing. And everyone's like, oh, is it going to be Reed Richards? Is John Krasinski going to be in it next week? And it's, no, it's not going to, they're not going to introduce Reed Richards here. That's not what's going to happen. The Fantastic Four will be introduced in their own film. You won't see them anywhere else before, really. And I was wrong, because you see Reed Richards here. And I do have a question about that, which I'll come back to, actually, which made me think as I was watching it. But the John Krasinski reveal was distracting because, as I say, it's a meme at this point. And I actually think he's not great casting for Reed Richards because he's too cool. You know, he looks cool and he just seems cool and collected. Reed Richards is high-functioning. He's not on your same wavelength. So he doesn't see the world the same way as other people. And you have that bit where Wanda says, do you have children? Or he says, I have children myself. I get it. Reed Richards wouldn't get it. He wouldn't understand. He has his own way of thinking about things. And yeah, so that was distracting. It was really distracting. It was cool to see him though. And the costume looked cool, but distracting.
Yeah. And then we've got the Captain Marvel. I thought that Captain Marvel was an interesting one. Because it's Monica's mother, isn't it?
Maria.
That was in there. So I thought that was good. And there's a couple of things that I wanted to mention that's just come to mind now, actually. So were the trailers? Have you seen the trailers? And
yeah, I've seen the trailers.
Were they trying to intimate that was our Captain Marvel? I can't quite remember. I know the Doctor Strange there's a couple of the trailers where Doctor Strange runs out and it's actually, you know, Christine's behind him and things like that, which, like, that wasn't in the trailer, which is obviously, you know, the new thing that Marvel tend to do with trailers.
Just cut people out, yeah. So I think it was Captain Marvel was definitely in one of the trailers. It showed Wanda fighting Captain Marvel, as it turned out to be, but everyone was thinking, is this going to be Tony Stark's Iron Man? So that was, it was either that or the Captain Marvel. And it was pretty obvious it was going to be Captain Marvel. And I believe there was a TV spot that gave more away that showed Captain Marvel and Peggy Carter as well in one of the TV spots. I didn't see that, but the Peggy Carter shield's in the poster anyway, or one of the posters. Right, yeah. So yeah, it's not a spoiler really, unless you're not looking at the poster. So
I was just watching Wanda. I'm Benedict Cumberbatch. Benedict Cumberbatch is a great.
Yeah, because the only cameo that was given away in the trailer was Patrick Stewart.
I thought that was a bit of a shame, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I mean, just from a personal perspective, you know, as you know, I'm a massive Sir Patrick Stewart fan. And I would have liked to have found that out rather than in my home watching it on a phone and watching a trailer on the phone to hear, I want to hear the truth. I'd have preferred to have heard that in the film.
What I thought when they gave me that cameo in the trailer was, wow, if that's what they're giving us in the trailer, what are they hiding in the film? Turns out nothing, really. John Krasinski, I guess, is your biggest surprise. But then, unless you're aware of the meme casting, it's not going to really mean much. It's just, why is he here?
It is the first time in the cinema that I've ever felt like, because the first time that I watched it, and I was with me for half, so I couldn't do it, where there was this massive, whoa, the John Krasinski stuff, right? And then when Patrick Stewart turned up, I wanted to go, yes! And just look back at him. I was like, I can't do it. Move her off would literally stab me to death. So I didn't do it. But that was a scary moment. But yeah, I mean, Patrick Stewart, I found, you know, if we talk about, I think we've talked about everyone we need to, but if we talk about Patrick Stewart for a second, it was really strange because obviously this has been filmed a while ago. Mm. And us watching Picard, you could tell the difference, and it was weird the fact that, you know, we're watching something that's on TV or on Amazon Prime in the UK right now here, in Star Trek Picard, then watching Patrick Stewart, which is maybe a couple of years old,
yeah,
which is like, you can see his age quite significantly.
Yeah, just in a couple of years, yeah. And also I thought his voice sounded less decrepit in this film than he does in Picard, and I wonder if he's putting on the more decrepit affectation for Picard. But then when you hear him in interviews as well, it sounds like his voice is creaking a bit. So I'm not sure where he's at with, or maybe he just was doing a bit, or maybe they did a bit in post or something. I don't clean up his voice in this. But it was an interesting addition. And so the question I have about the Illuminati in terms of the physical appearance of them. So all the characters we've heard of before, Peggy and Captain Marvel and so on, they look like the versions that we know of in the 616 universe, the main MCU universe.
Yeah.
So then you've got John Krasinski as Mr. Fantastic, Patrick Stewart as Xavier. So the question is, does that mean that the versions of them in our universe have to be those actors? Because everyone else is the same. I know it's the multiverse and you can mix and match probably, but it just seems a bit pointed in that respect.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Because obviously the strangers we've seen are all the same.
Yeah. Whereas in Spider-Man, you get two completely different-looking Spider-Men completely different-looking Peter Parkers in different universes. But in this, it's specifically, this is all the same people just remixed in different ways. So does that mean that Patrick Stewart has to be Xavier in our universe? I don't know. I did like his intro with the riff on the 97 X-Men theme. That was a really nice little touch. And he's in that chair that's drowning him. He's absolutely drowning in it.
Yeah, I was giggling to myself going, oh my God, that chair is so bad. It is so bad. It's good, but it's so bad.
Two captains in the one shot, the wrong one in the chair.
Yeah, that's a deep cut for anyone who doesn't watch Star Trek.
But it's interesting Anson Mount reprising his role as Black Bolt from the Inhuman series that everybody wants to forget. It's interesting. It's comic accurate in this, whereas he wasn't as such in the TV show.
Right, okay. I didn't watch Inhuman, so that's probably a good thing.
Don't waste your time. Yeah, it's awful.
I think you've mentioned that to me before, so I'm definitely not going to. And I actually did think that the attack on Wanda from their perspective was interesting, that, you know, you've got this kind of like saying Bolt is kind of this so powerful man that, you know, he can kill people with just his voice. And obviously we see that with the Strange that they had and the fact that they hid that story from the world in their version. You know, and we've got Mordo, who's he was obviously looking after the Sorcerer Supreme stuff in this. I thought that the Xavier stuff is really good because it really works in the kind of aspect of the Multiverse of Madness anyway, because you've got this abstract white vision that he has, and then we get to see the actual Wanda.
Yeah.
And I thought that I think that's really the only time we see Wanda as that in Wanda's own mind. You know, so we see the 838 version, but we never really see her. You know, maybe a little bit with when she's like dreamwalking. But I did think it was an interesting thing that they actually used that, and they also used like the kind of the Tony Starkism stuff of, you know, of WandaVision with the TV, and you could see the stuff in there and the going through the doorway and having kind of a redress of what we saw with Agnes in WandaVision, with actually underneath the rocks and stuff like that, which kind of led to the point of, you know, trying to pull Wanda out there, and then the visceral way. You know, I really love Wanda. You know, Wanda's my favourite character. I draw a line when Patrick Stewart or Xavier's head gets snapped like that. I think I've hit a point where I can't really go any further than that.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult to redeem her after this if that's what they plan to do. If they try and do it, it's going to be a difficult one. But yeah, the Illuminati are useless, really. They don't last very long. And it's quite funny when Wanda's taken out Black Bolt, one of the more powerful ones. And then Peggy's like, yeah, I'm going to have a go with my shield. That'll end well. She seems to think that she's a match for
isn't
her.
Isn't that the way that... Yeah, isn't that the way also that, that Captain America dies in What If, and probably other comic books, with being sliced right through the middle?
The zombie one, I think, maybe. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's how he died there. I don't know if there's any other comic book allusions to that.
Oh, there probably is, yeah. So, but there's that. And then it's the bit where there's, we're going to leave the chamber and deal with Wanda, and then we'll come back and vote. Like, okay. Yeah. It's good that you think that you'll be able to come back and vote. It's good that you think that.
We also have, within this film as well, moving on slightly, is Mordor. And I think the fight scene with Strange, and when it was an actual visceral fight scene, because the powers were taken away from them, the handcuffs, I actually really enjoyed that. I thought that was a really nice action piece. It's interesting, though, because obviously we get to the end of Doctor Strange in the first movie, and it's like, okay, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. And obviously we've got a different version here. But at the same, because obviously then you've got Doctor Strange actually saying to America about, he's been at me ever since, and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And it's obviously a different, completely different person in this realm. But at the same time, I actually thought that it was an interesting, the fight scene and the discussions that they have were quite fascinating. I did like the way that Strange kind of clicked onto how he could get out of the situation.
Yeah,
but I thought it was interesting. But I still don't know quite if they're going to go any further with Mordor, because he obviously is the nemesis for Strange. But it, like I said in the Doctor Strange, the first one, the 2016 one last week, how can it's difficult now because he's beyond that in a lot of ways. Now will three come back and they will reduce it more, or? You know, I mean, it's going to be interesting what they do with those characters.
Yeah, the Mordo thread is something they just seem to have put on the board for something that they can maybe pick up later. I actually thought it was really rushed. It was because he changed his entire way of thinking after Strange invoked the Dark Dimension and travelled back in time and stuff. And he's like, no, you broke the rules. Yeah. Screw this, I'm out. And then that translates to later on, I'm going to just kill everybody that shouldn't have magic, according to me. And then we don't know what happens next. I suppose the implication is here that maybe tussled once or twice since then, because he says he devoted his life to killing me. It's like, we've not really had that. We've not really had an interaction after Mordo leaves. So cool, take your word for it. And then it's one weird thing that I kept banging up against while watching this film as well, is people use their knowledge of like their own universe version of someone to extrapolate what the other version of them will do. So are they different people or not? I know in Spider-Man No Way Home, Peter Parker is always fundamentally the same. Those three Peter Parkers are, at their core, the same guy. They understand the same, they have the same morality and whatever. So in this, it's apparently every Doctor Strange across the multiverse is arrogant and tempted by the Darkhold and whatever. That's just the way he is. So every Mordo is jealous and opportunistic, and I wasn't really buying into that. It would have been more interesting if Mordo hadn't risen to the bait and they had to do something else.
Do you think that's the Waldron effect with, like, obviously knowing what we know from Loki?
There's
an element of
that? Yeah, because in Loki it was about, well, we need to track down a Loki variant. What better way to do it than this Loki? This Loki will know how he operates. He, she, it, whatever iteration of Loki we're after operates. So maybe it could be a bit of that, but I would have found it more interesting had Mordo just not fallen for it in a way, but also, and they found some other way to wind him up or whatever. But I do like that the only reason Strange gets away is because Mordo apparently can't do parkour to get out of the ditch that they're in. And I liked it was like, I'm beginning to understand why your Mordo didn't like you, and he's already left the room. He's not even listening to the... listening to the rebuttal, he's just gone.
It's interesting. I do like, even to the point, and it's a nice little bit of direction where, because he kind of like jumps off the wall and onto the other one, and Strange actually just struggles to get out of it. And I thought that was just nice little like moment. And I think that fight scene was really kind of quite good for that. It was kind of, you know, just your typical fight film. You know, it was nicely choreographed. It was some nice little throws there. I think I saw someone saying about, you see quite a lot of Mordo's boots at the bottom of his boot when he gets flipped and whatever. But I thought it was a nice little fight scene. Yeah. Actually, when I watched it the second time, I still enjoyed that as well. So I thought that, you know, having that kind of grounded fight worked really well.
Yeah, you can sort of follow it, whereas with the magic stuff, there's always a counter spell. Whoever gets the final counter spell wins, that kind of thing.
I don't know the comic books as well, and it's something that I did want to bring up, so I'll bring it up here, the Souls of the Damned stuff. For me, I just felt, and I think you, on watching it the second time, I think you need it. But when I watched it the first time, I was like, where are we now? Where are we going now? What are we doing here? You know what I mean? And it did feel like it needed to be put in there because they needed to have this fight scene between Wanda and Strange.
How does he get up the mountain? Well, he has to use dead people as a cape and get up there. Or a cloak, sorry. I have to understand the distinction. It's a cloak, not a cape.
But yeah, what did he make to the fact that he's used, because you probably know the lore more than I do, but the fact that, you know, it's not looked upon what Strange was doing there. And I suppose there's a little bit of this using the Darkhold and, you know, Strange going down that route of actually using the tools available to him, which will inevitably kind of end up with him using the Darkhold, which obviously has ramifications towards the back end of this episode. Yeah, so what did you make to the Souls of the Damned stuff and that kind of last element when we get towards Wanda with Strange?
I was pretty good with it. It was a good Sam Raimi beat as well, because they were kind of comedic Souls of the Damned. They weren't terrifying in the traditional sense, but they were also a necessary inclusion to solve a very particular problem, as in, how does he get up the mountain? Mm. He needs a way to fly. He doesn't have a cloak, so that's how we're going to do it. But also on a different level, it is consequence to using the Darkhold is an immediate one. So it's, I'm going to do this. This is completely forbidden. This is something that I should not be able to do, but, or shouldn't be allowed to do, but I'm going to have to do it because there's no other option. And then there is a consequence to that, as in, well, Souls of the Damned are going to come after me, which made me wonder, actually, in relation to Moon Knight, why that didn't really happen in Moon Knight, because they were doing sort of similar stuff. But who knows? It's slightly different. it's an interesting... It was an interesting thing, and I thought it was quite a cool little beat, as in, gave Christine something to do, fight them off, and inspire Strange to turn it to his advantage. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
There was a little bit of like, I'll go back to hell, and I was like, okay, all right. It's not exactly that great. Which will lead me to where we get to at the end of the movie, and then we can talk about the kind of the thing that holds everything together in this, is the realization for Strange not to take America's powers. And we'll come to talk about America now. So, yeah, the arc of, you know, from the beginning of this movie where Strange was taking America's powers, because it was, as you say, from the top of the hour, when we were talking about the scene in there in the between worlds, to the end where Strange has that kind of look that he kind of has in Endgame, in Infinity War, which is there's only one real choice in the matter, and that realization that he has to like sort of trust what America's going to do, and America's got to trust herself. So, yeah, I think it's time to talk about her and what she brings to the movie, and obviously the realization for Strange and how he is different from the other Strangers.
Yeah, America was an interesting character. I think she wasn't as well used as she could have been, and her role could have largely been filled by just an item. You know, here's a thing that lets you travel through the multiverse. They could have had that. Instead, they made it a person. And if they'd given her more to do, then fair enough. They introduced the whole thing about her mother's, that 12 seconds of controversial footage that might get cut to be released in other countries, which is hilarious. It's just, the only LGBT reference in this film is moms, and that's it. And you can see how they could easily cut it, but don't do it, because we're already starved for that kind of representation in this universe as it is. So it's a shame that this is the slightest thing that you're playing with and people don't like it or whatever. But yeah, there wasn't enough of that. There wasn't enough of her. There wasn't enough of her backstory. She just kind of got dragged along. She was the object that needed to be claimed. There's two books. There's her. Those are the three MacGuffins in this film. So they could have done more. I did like her back and forth with Strange. I like how she came to trust him. And I do like how she achieved that confidence to use her powers and understand how to use her powers. I do think it came a bit too quickly, though, as well, at the same time, because it was just in that moment. It's like, right, I can do this now. I've perfected it.
Yeah. The only other time was when she bashed the Illuminati door, where that was kind of like an indication that she was trying to get the some sort of control.
But she was also scared in that moment, so it was the same trigger.
Yeah. So. No, I mean, as I say, with that, again, you know, when I watched it the first time, the mom's thing just didn't bat an eyelid with her, just didn't even think about it. And then I think then I watched it the second time and went, oh, yeah, there was that thing with people are talking about in various different, you know, lands.
That Saudi Arabia, I think it was.
Some LGBTQ. Yeah. And I was like, well, it just beggars belief. I just really don't understand it. But yeah, I thought the memory thing was okay. It's kind of sets up, you know, America for whatever may well come with her. Obviously, we get the Christine stuff and we get the reflection from Strange by her asking the questions about Christine.
Yeah.
You know, and then obviously seeing the watch and things, which is obviously the thing that is another kind of emblem of their relationship, which comes back into play when they're doing the whole opening the waypoint. Later on, I thought that for me, there was a little bit of like, I don't know, not necessarily found family, but Strange seems to be getting the kid aspect recently. you know, with the fact that he just did that in No Way Home, and now he's got America, and he's calling her the kid. I did find that interesting, but from America's point of view, I thought that, you know, it was intriguing how they kind of used her, but not so much, and it just felt like it was not a backdoor pilot, but it felt like that kind of aspect of like, well, you're not going to learn too much about her, but you'll find out about her in later shows.
Well, they set up that she needs to find her mothers, and she doesn't find them in this film, so that's still lingering, isn't it?
And and just kind of like the almost like Strange has found a family kind of aspect to it in some ways, that he's found this person while Wanda's kind of trying to do it in a completely different way, you know. And it just seems there's maybe a bit of commentary in there as well. So I thought she was serviceable. I think she did the job that was required without really needing to do much more. And I think you saying about the books and the MacGuffins are in there, that it definitely felt like that was part of that, and could have easily been an object. Yeah, but
she was likable, though.
But it worked.
I liked her.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and...
Yeah, she had some great moments. I mean, the pizza ball moment, and obviously we will talk about Bruce Campbell in a second.
Yeah, to your point about the Strange finding a family thing, it's something I didn't really think about before, but yeah, there's a sense of him just trying to find where he belongs, which seems to be the Sanctum and Camertage and so on, which is a place that he belongs, but he went there for less than genuine reasons, as he went there to fix himself, so to speak. And it turns out it fixes him in different ways. But I like the moment that he has with Wong at the end, where Wong basically says, stop thinking about what you don't have and take stock of what you do have, which is a great little life lesson that a lot of people should internalise. And it's essentially what Wanda should have tried to internalise, as in, well, Wong tries to give her that same lesson. Isn't it enough that out there somewhere there's a version of you that's happy with your children? And she's like, nope, has to be me. And so she doesn't understand what she has in this world. Although, well, the film doesn't tell you, but even at the end of WandaVision, she doesn't have anything. She leaves and goes to be by herself. So, yeah, she's a pretty tragic character. But Wong's perspective on, this life isn't perfect, but it's mine and I'm all right with it, that's where Strange needs to get to, and he isn't there yet.
And Wong's play is that really
well. I love
Wong.
You know, I just love all his recent appearances. His appearance in Shang-Chi, superb. For some reason, he's the Sorcerer Supreme, but he's doing a bit of a side hustle, doing fighting the Abomination and collecting money for whatever reason. And singing
karaoke.
Of course, yeah. And in Spider-Man, he's kicking about as well. And... yeah, I love Wong. I want to see more of Wong.
I think Wong's used quite well. In fact, he's quite sparse, but he's actually used. And part of my questioning in my head goes to the fact that Strange and Wanda don't really spend that much time together It's obviously because it's that chaste. Yeah. So Wong plays that part of, like, the captured one and you know, the one that has to go along and challenge Wanda in that sense. Do you think that that worked in dividing the two kind of stories up with Wanda and Strange and having, like, kind of the duality of, you know, America and Strange and Wong and Wanda?
I kind of did, although I don't understand Wong's methodology sometimes. He identifies that Strange is a bit of a loose cannon, tends to screw stuff up. He already knows that Strange went to Wanda and told her everything she needed to know before he understood the whole situation. Yeah. So we found this kid that can travel the multiverse and we're keeping her in camouflage. Do you want to come and see if you can help her? And then, so, oh yeah, that's actually who I'm looking for, so I'm just going to come and destroy the place and take her. Thanks. So well done, Strange, for giving her exactly the information she needs. You could have been a bit more cagey there. And then when she comes to attack, Wong's like, yeah, you handle this. You go up there and you speak to her. And
choose your words wisely. Like,
you do it. Do you really trust this guy at this point to do the job properly? I wouldn't. So I don't understand that sometimes.
I suppose Wong couldn't like sort of elevate himself up there though.
Well, he could use the cloak, maybe. I don't know. He could
just get the cloak to go. Yeah. Go on, you take one.
Step on a magical staircase. I don't know. There's a spell for everything. Yeah, you could do something. True. I don't know. But it just seems weird that he delegates these things to Strange that he knows will be screwed up because they always are. It's even when he's possessing the zombie. Possessing the corpse, and he's like, I don't even want to know. I mean, he let him do that thing with Spider-Man, although considering how that film ends, you don't know what they even remember about that, what the details are in their brains, but he lets him do that and the mess that makes. So if I was Wong, I'd be like, right, you stand back there, I'll give this a go, because you suck, quite frankly, Strange. You don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, Kamataj is meant to be a fortress, and you end up just so choose your words wisely. And then he comes back and goes,
yeah, so she's going to kill us all? That's what's going to happen here.
Oh, amazing. Brilliant. Other than that, is there anything that's jumping out at you right now? Because I'm at a loss, really, of anything that's jumping out at me at the moment for anything that we need to discuss, any major talking points that we need to talk about.
I think it doesn't lead into the multiverse concept as well as it could have, because you only really get one display of that potential where they're hopping through different universes, and it's a blink and you'll miss it. We wave at it on the way past sort of thing. There's the one with the dinosaurs, here's the animated one, here's the paint one, and here's whatever. And yeah, could we not have had a bit more of multiverse traveling? Could it not have been more of a chase through the multiverse? That might have been fun. And I haven't seen it yet. I don't think many of us in the UK have, but that Everything Everywhere All at Once, the multiverse, or as I like to call it, the multiverse of Michelle Yeoh. So I'm led to believe that that capitalizes on the weird multiverse shenanigans concept more than this does. So I wish they'd kind of done more with that, because they only arrive in another version of New York with a slightly different CGI backdrop. You know, it's got flowers on buildings and the weirdest thing that happens is, they cross the street on red instead of green. That's weird, isn't it? And it's a bit of a shame that way, because they could have done more with it. And that's what I was alluding to when I said that not everyone will get, or most people won't get what they expect from this film, because I was kind of expecting that. And maybe they could have used that to chuck in cameos as they hop into the X-Men universe and there's Wolverine or, you know, anything like that. Wanda just kills people in different previous Marvel universes. She kills Nicolas Cage, Ghost Rider, or whatever. I don't know. They could have, that might have been too distracting in a way, and I didn't really have a problem with it as it sits, but it promises me two things, multiverse and madness. And it gave me both, but it didn't quite give me both. So, yeah, it was a bit of a disappointment in that respect.
Yeah, I think you're right in that. I'm not necessarily, for me, when I thought about the actual multiverse of madness being likes of the Wanda, maybe killing Nick Cage or whatever like that. But I thought it might have, I think part of me is like thinking about that propulsiveness of the first one, that where you at least have some unique stuff to do, you know, like sort of when he's being shown the astral projection element in the first film where it gets a bit mad. This one, as you say, it was interesting the way it was filmed, because it felt like you were going through a kaleidoscope. It felt like, but you were going through it fairly slowly. It was kind of like going from one thing to another, to another, to another. Whereas if you look at, like, say, the first film, when you've got things happening in the fight scene with the Ancient One and things like that, where things are happening around you, or the Spider-Man stuff where you know, he was making things happen and things like that. There wasn't really that kind of element, and I thought it would have been nice to see a little bit of that, but see some really random stuff happening and have some really abstractness, rather than just seeing that pink thing and just seeing that as it goes through it, and then seeing the dinosaur. It's like, right, well, that's just someone putting, splicing different bits of film together. And I think there was one that was like black and white or sepia as it went through as well, and the cartoon one, which was funny.
Well, it happened so quickly, so you can't, your eye doesn't have enough time to register what's actually going on for most of them. But yeah, could we not have just had a five-minute animated sequence, or 5 minutes of them fighting a dinosaur, or 5 minutes of them as paint? You know, really play with this. You've opened yourself up to do anything, and you kind of do anything in one sequence, but play with it.
It makes me wonder what we would have got had it been a 2-hour, 40-minute movie rather than a 2-hour movie, and whether or not there is stuff on the cutting room floor.
Because
the rumours were it was going to be like a 2-hour, 40-minute movie, and it ends up being 2 hours and 6. So
I don't know. I think you could have sacrificed other things to make more interesting visual stuff happen in that. But and you would have just, I don't know, extended the chase a bit. It's just Wanda chasing them through universes. She just follows them, and America keeps getting scared and keeps taking them to another universe, and then they fight and do stuff there, and then eventually they leave her behind a universe, and then that's where the dreamwalking happens. Or I don't know. They could have played with it to some degree. For sure.
For me, I don't think there's anything else that's jumping out at me. There's probably loads of stuff because, obviously, as I say, we've only watched it a couple of times. You know, and one thing, it's unfortunate. I mean, it's not as bad for me if we record this in a couple of days' time, because I can watch it as many times as I want without being like sort of hiding out in the corner and going, I'm just gonna have a quick break, you know, watch 20 minutes of it. But
yeah, this will be me until Blu-ray, I think, unless someone else wants to see it, maybe. Yeah.
I will now see the first segment up until they go into the into 616, and the final kind of segment. You know, that's all I'll see now. It's for the next like 2 or 3 weeks. That'll be it. It'll be a case of start the film, watch that bit, watch him speaking Spanish. That was a brilliant moment, actually, when they're at the breakfast table and had the camera phone and, you know, are you going to the wedding? What are you doing? Was that Christine's wedding? And he went, no, yes, no.
That was good.
That was a nice little touch. Yeah.
It's like, I was coming from a wedding. You married Christine? No. It's like, you went? Just Wong did a bit of gossiping there again. He likes to know what's going on.
So no, it was a nice bit of levity. Is there anything that's jumping out at you that we might want to discuss before we close up for today?
Not especially, no. I there's a lot, but also not a lot going on, which is weird. I think we covered more or less everything I can think of. Zombie Strange looked cool. I think it was good that the actual third act climactic battle thing, it was entirely as a corpse.
Yeah.
It was quite an interesting choice.
Yeah.
And I'd actually forgotten about the corpse as well. It's the dreamwalking thing. And it's like, but doesn't there need to be a version of you living in that universe? And he's like, who said it had to be living? And I was like, oh yeah, that happened earlier. Forgot about that.
Yeah. No, they do play that quite well, actually. I mean, even like the Vishanti stuff at the beginning. And obviously, you know, it's they're approaching something. It's MCU, for God's sake. But it's like, and I do like the fact, as I say, it's like, that's the red herring of the show, you know, where it's like, this is the book that will defeat anything. This will defeat the Darkhold, and that's taken away, and we have to view it
destroyed immediately.
And as you say, with the way that Wanda kind of is broken down by America realizing what she can do to make this happen, is a bit convenient, but at the same time, I think it really works, because someone as powerful as Scarlet Witch, like we've seen him, she kind of what I was alluding to before with, you know, just annihilating the Illuminati, just goes to show how powerful she is. And the only way that anyone could defeat her is actually herself, you know, and I think that worked really well, you know, because she is extremely powerful. So that calls this week to an end. If people were wanting to read some more about this film and your review, where can people find that, and where can people find you online?
So you can find me on Neil Before Blog, that's neilbeforeblog.co.uk, or Facebook and Twitter, just type it in, you'll find it. I've reviewed this film. My views have changed a bit since I reviewed it, as happens, you sit with it for longer, you think about it, you see it again, things change. But yeah, I stand by my initial opinion. I would still say it's a decent 4-star experience, despite all the problems that I've identified over this. Maybe I'll talk my way down to 3 stars eventually. Also, the Neil Before blog, it seems to be a Star Trek website by and large at the moment, because I was reviewing Picard, Strange New Worlds, still reviewing The Flash, Superman and Lois. So that's all happening. That's all on there. There's a connected podcast as well. Our most recently released episode was our Star Wars Day special, where we finally got to Revenge of the Sith. So we're done with the Skywalker saga. We have to be more creative with our Star Wars Day specials now. Next year, we're doing the Ewok films.
Lovely.
Because why not? We're going to give that a go. It's going to be an experience. But yeah, there's a podcast associated there. There'll be a version of this conversation with different people with me featured on there as well. And we're going to do Picard and so on. And Moon Knight and all that stuff. So that's where you can find me. On We Made This, I pop up on Podcast 616 quite a lot. I pop up on Real Talk, wherever I'm needed, really. Yeah. I'll be in the captain's chair for some of We Are Starfleet's coverage of Strange New Worlds as well. I think I'm doing the 3rd episode. Well, no, I don't think. I definitely am doing the 3rd episode. Yeah. So you'll hear me there. And as is contractual, I have to do this in every universe. I have to tell you that my personal handle on Twitter is Nemesis4909, which was originally a Resident Evil reference before it became a Star Trek reference as well. But maybe in another universe it was first a Star Trek reference and then later as an Evil reference. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, if Bane's played by Tom Hardy in most universes, then we'll, you know, is he played Picard in others? Yeah, so anyway, yeah, well, thank you for coming over to podcast 838. Much appreciated.
838.
yeah, you can find me on Twitter at @rmuldrake. That's RMULDRAKE. Recently just finished the Star Trek Picard podcast, Make It So, for season 2. We are going to be doing a season 2 review, so those people who are half fans of Sir Patrick Stewart, then please come along and join us over there. You can find all my other podcasts that I'm on, the Red Dwarf podcast, the X-Files podcast, Millennium, and all other kinds of podcasts like that, on my Twitter feed. It'll be in my bio there, so by all means, just drop into there. But, yeah, Marvel isn't what we're only talking about on the network. We talk about a lot of different things. As we've alluded to here, Star Trek, we've got Red Dwarf, we've got X-Files, we've got music. We've got all kinds of things happening on the network. And you'll hear a little flavour of what's been happening on the network in the next couple of minutes. So stay tuned for that. If you've enjoyed this episode of Podcast 616, because that's where I'm actually at, then please feel free to give us a 5-star review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you may find. It does help us to be seen. We had a good run of late with things like Moon Knight and as I say, the Doctor Strange stuff. And yeah, so we're really enjoying putting these podcasts out there for you. So by all means, give us a quick rating. Yeah, but other than that, all that's left for me to say is, Craig, thank you very much for coming on and talking to some Wanda and Doctor Strange. You know, as I say, alluded to before, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch, Elizabeth Olsen and Patrick Stewart in the same film is all right by me. It's all right by me. but yeah, thank you very much for coming on and rejoining us.
My pleasure.
Joining up for the WandaVision team.
Yeah, for the WandaVision finale.
The WandaVision finale.
We finally got there.
Yeah, and there might be a prologue, we never know. But yeah, until next time, remember everyone, it's over!
Elsewhere on We Made This.
Make It So, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
Why? Why do you even need to bring that up? Mm. You don't... We've done a story, and you're just using that for the... God! No, it's like, no. I don't get it. I understand it. I understand Soongs. Soongs are always going to be in some way related to the Kang story because of genetics and the stuff like that they've done. I get it, but to do that, and if it comes in season 3, if it's a main thing in season 3, then I'll hold judgment. If it doesn't get mentioned in season 3, then what was the point?
Guardian reading lefty, which
a bleeding heart is one of the phrases we use a lot here in the US. Like, oh, he cares about the homeless. I'm sort of shifting into my Limbo impersonation. Oh, he wants to house the homeless. What is he, a communist? Like, you know, that's not maybe a little, but he's concerned with this. He's concerned with climate change. He's concerned with poverty. He's concerned with just general treatment of your fellow human beings. Like, I'm sure he resents having been subjected to trauma in his own life.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives him a great deal of sympathy, which I think is a good quality.
Geek polymath.
Third one. Are the following names of hops? US space shuttles or both?
Brilliant.
First one, Atlantis.
No, it's a US space shuttle, but is it a hop? I'm going to say it's just a US space shuttle.
Correct.
Good.
I've
got to get best of three again.
I didn't know that was a space shuttle. Well, that's my poor knowledge, that is. second one, Galaxy.
I know that that's a hop because I've seen it in a pub recently. I don't know if it's a space shuttle, so I'm going to say both.
Just a hop, that one.
Oh, damn it, damn it, damn it.
Next one, Endeavour.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network. In one of the universes, we meet a pizza bottle seller who does take money, apparently, because money is not a thing in most universes. Apparently.
For food, anyway.
You know, that would be nice. What did you make to Bruce Campbell's appearances here? Now, I'm not au fait with the Evil Dead, but I am au fait with Bruce Campbell because he was in an X-File episode because of his stuff in the Evil Dead. So I was aware of who he was. I was like, oh, right. So I know him via proxy. But it was good seeing him. It took me a minute to work out who he was at first. I was like,
I'm the same, but he's a good bit older now, face? Isn't he? Yeah,
he's looking old.
You'll be aware of him in the three Raimi Spider-Man films, surely, where he has pretty memorable cameos in all three of them.
Well, no, because I'm not a Spider-Man fan and I haven't watched the three Spider-Man films. The only Spider-Man film I've watched is Spider-Man No...
Okay. In the first Raimi film, he's a wrestling announcer. In the second one, he's an usher. In the third film, he's a hilarious restaurant maitre guy. So even just look those cameos up on YouTube, because they're... Certainly the third one. They're funny enough in themselves. Just put Spider-Man 3, Bruce Campbell cameo on YouTube and enjoy, because it's really funny. And he's kind of Sam Raimi's lucky charm, I guess. He appears in everything Sam Raimi does in some way. I can't remember where he was in Oz the Great and the Powerful, even if he was in it, I'm not sure. But yes, in this it was funny. Hey, you've got to pay for that, and you stole Doctor Strange's stuff from the Doctor Strange Museum. And, what are you talking about, museum? And then he just has to hit himself for 3 weeks. And then, which is very Evil Dead, as in him getting possessed by the deadites and punching himself and stuff like that. And then, the end credits where he turns to the camera and it's like, it's over. It was a good one. It was a good post-credit scene. So, it's always good to see Bruce Campbell. He doesn't have a massive impact on the plot, obviously. But still, he was good. It was good to just see him there for a minute or so.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was nice to see. As I say, this the humor, because there was some deadpan humor in right throughout the episodes, the film. You know, Strange, where he says, "I'm used to the multiverse. I don't get sick," and then he's puking seconds later, which was great. And obviously the cloak getting damaged and things like that. We've already talked about one end credit scene. We've got another one to talk about in Charlize Theron. When they open up the dark dimension, and I did leave the cinema in my head just going, I've come to bargain, Dumamu. And honest to God, I've got Tourette's a little bit with it, because I was sitting there watching it in the projection room this afternoon as I was just about to turn the lights up and things. I was helping with the films today. When that came up, for the next 2 or 3 minutes, I was going, Dumamu, I've come to bargain. I don't know why I was doing it. But that opens up some interesting stuff for Doctor Strange when he returns. So, just a generic kind of like sort of feed on it. It did have before that, though, at the very end where he opens a third eye, which was obviously from the Darkhold and what happened there. So what do you think of those two elements moving into Doctor Strange in the future?
I think as a post-credit sequence, it'll be very, very confusing. It's like, what's Charlize Theron doing here? Why is she doing this? And they talk about the incursion. They don't really explain well enough what an incursion is. It's when two realities crash together and break something. They set it up, but they don't make it seem like a big deal. And I was actually pleasantly surprised when the Darkhold did have a lingering effect on Strange, because I was half expecting a like that was only them. It'll be fine when I do it. So the fact that it has some kind of impact on him, although you don't know what that impact is other than the third eye. Is he corrupted? Is he whatever? Who knows? You see the end result of that potentially, but that's with prolonged use with his other self, with that really cool musical battle. I really loved that. I thought that was a really creative little sequence with the musical notes and him plucking the harp string to get the last weapon against him and stuff. That was really cool. But the...
And there was a really kind of Phantom of the Opera kind of thing with the Eva Strange, wasn't it? Where it was like, no!
Yeah, it was really cool. Really cool. But yeah, that sequence, the post-credit sequence with Charlize Theron, it doesn't give you enough. I mean, it is a tease, but it's one of those teases that will mean nothing to most of the viewers. It's almost like the first viewing of Thanos at the end of the Avengers. It's like, who's that guy? What's that? But that has a bit of an ominous feel to it. And he's actually set up earlier in the film as well, because it's... Because they keep referring to some of the boss. It's like the guy you're dealing with in the interview, you see the chair and whatever. So you know there's someone behind this, but you don't know who it is. Whereas in this, she's here and she's like, yeah, I'm here to take you to deal with this incursion, whatever that is, whatever an incursion is. And then she opens up the dark dimension.
Who is this character? It's kind of like, isn't it? It's like, who is this character? Where is she coming from? I'm saying that myself. So
in the comics, I think she's Dormammu's niece in the comics. If I remember right, she's related to him in some way anyway. And she goes back and forth between good and evil or whatever. And it's complicated. It's actually who a lot of people thought Rachel McAdams was playing in the first movie.
Oh, right, okay.
When she was first cast, it was one of the prevailing theories. It's like, nah, she's just some other doctor. More disappointing, I suppose, than the alternative. But yeah, so they've introduced her and it's interesting. Yeah, it was a nice surprise because I had no idea. Because usually you hear about, you read a rumour about Charlize Theron showing up in the film. Months ahead of it, and then it's one of those things that you forget about until just before it happens, and you're like, oh yeah, I remember reading about that. That's disappointing that I know about that. Yeah. So yeah, it was okay. It depends what they do with it, if anything. They've promised us Doctor Strange will return.